Well, hi and welcome. Who's just joined?
Paula.
Paula, hi. How are you?
I'm fine, and you, Dr. Kruger?
I'm great. One thing to be sure and be aware of is next week we will go on daylight saving time in the U.S. So it will be 1 hour later than it is right now.
So it's going to be at 7 o'clock your time?
Right. Okay. Right. I'm central, so I'm 4 o'clock. It's 5 o'clock Eastern. So it will still be 5 o'clock Eastern, but it will be daylight saving, so it will be 1 hour later, plus 1 hour. Whatever your time is now, just add 1 hour because of daylight saving. Does that make sense?
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. I'll come back. I'll go back to 8 o'clock. It's 7 o'clock here now.
Okay. Yeah, all right. 7 p.m.?
7 p.m.
Yeah, okay. Great. Right now, you and I are the only ones on the call. Are there any questions or things that would be helpful for us to talk about?
Yeah, I went through the exercises of module 5. Yes?
Yes, great. Did you have any trouble with the recording of the last seminar?
No, no problem at all.
Good.
Yeah, and I have a question here. When it is said, let me just check it out. There's a question. If no one has any, what would that be if no one has any control over you? So my question is, for example, what is the difference between being controlled by someone or being controlled by the feeling I have about someone? For example, my kids, they don't control me, but my feeling that I don't want to upset them in any way controls me.
Okay.
You understand what I mean?
Tell me your question just in a very succinct way. I want to be sure I understand it. Can you put it in
the question is, the question is, what would it be like if no one has any control over you?
Okay. Let's begin with it would be adult.
What that
means is that you're not responding as if you are an extension of anyone else's needs or desires, and you're not requiring anyone to respond to you as if they're an extension of your need and your desire. In other words, you have an internal point of reference, you're your own authority, and you determine what you think and feel and experience. You're writing your own story. No one's ghostwriting it for you. You're not trying to fit into what you think someone else wants, but you have totally an internal point of reference. So the answer is autonomy.
Okay.
Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, it makes sense.
Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Okay. Okay. Anything else that you'd like to talk about?
I did one short story about myself before until the exercise, the module 4. And then because I could see that in module 5, we are going deeper, right?
Today we're on module 3, which is step 6 and step 7. We're looking at the last two steps in the roadmap process, which is the completion of module 3, just as in your syllabus, since we're a week 5. Are we on the same page?
I have it here. Yes, we are on the same page.
Okay, great. Anything?
But module 3, but seminar 5. That it?
Say it again, please.
Module 3, but seminar 5.
Yes.
Okay.
Exactly, which is step 6 and 7. Was there anything about that you'd like us to talk about?
No, because I read it several times and I did the exercises. I think I'm okay.
Are you finding the process and the system useful, a useful way to think about understanding your own story and perhaps that of clients as well?
Yes, because as I understood, we have to write our own story from the perspective of the present time, right?
Yes.
So I'm not writing from the perspective when I was a little child or when I was 10 years old. I'm writing from the perspective of a 62-year-old woman, right?
Exactly.
How I see my past story.
Exactly.
And the lessons I learned from it that I can bring to the present, but the story remains in the past. I see only the lessons that I, from that time.
And one of the things we listen for in ourselves and in our clients is what is the model that they're using to understand what they experience and how they process things. Is the model current, or was the model tailor-made for an earlier time or an earlier context? So what's the mindset or the map that's being used? Because you want a map that is accurate plus that is current, so that the software needs to be updated on a regular basis.
Okay.
And that's the process we're looking at, is how to really deconstruct and understand the elements that go into writing a story so that we can help someone as a catalyst to help them move to a current story, a more effective story.
Yes, in this way we align ourselves, the present, with our story in the past, but the pattern, if I want to change the pattern, I have to analyze it from the perspective I have today, and with the perspective that I have today, I can build new paths, right?
Yes, and once we do the six steps, six and seven today, I would suggest that each of you actively begin putting together your roadmap case study. It may be on yourself, it may be on a client. I think this will crystallize some understanding and really develop a way of looking at this in a more specific and tangible way to do a case study and to write it up. The people who have done training before find that it's immensely useful, and I think you'll find it useful too to really apply this. So it's not just a theory or some notions that we put together, but something that you bring into focus into a cohesive story focusing on a specific aspect of a life story.
Okay.
Let me check in.
What's up?
Has Robin or Emily arrived?
Hi, this is Robin. I'm so sorry I'm late.
Robin, welcome. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Progress note or update?
Well, I'm glad I do need to start putting together my roadmap. When you said that, I thought, yeah, I am. I've sketched some things, and part of it is trying to decide what old story I want to get rid of, because I have several that I'm finding.
Okay.
So that's good. I really, in this module, particularly liked how it talked a little bit about the difference between, like, psychotherapy versus coaching and being too far into someone's story and the one that they're trying to get rid of. I thought that part was valuable for me. So anyway, I'm moving through the work, but I think you're right. I do personally need to stop and start practicing on myself and moving forward there.
Okay. Are each of you ready to let's schedule the times that you each present your roadmap case studies? Why don't we start with March 28th and do March 28th, April 4th, and April 11th?
Okay.
Who would like to volunteer for March 28th?
All right.
I'm sorry, this is Robin, you said?
I think we both spoke up.
Emily is here? Okay, Emily, you're down. And bring us up
I've
to date.
Here,
what's
yeah.
What's going on for you?
Those would be good because I feel like I'm just keep reading and stuff. So I think making me write something will help me understand it better.
Having a little bit of trouble hearing. Can you get a little bit closer to, or take it off speaker, or get a little bit closer to your mouth?
Oh, can you hear me better now?
Way better. Yeah, go ahead.
I think making me, like, forcing myself to write it will make me understand it better. So, yeah, I need to sit down and focus.
Thank you for doing that. You're down for the 28th. Who would volunteer for April 4th?
I can. This is Robin.
Okay. Excellent. Okay, and Paolo, you're down for April 11th. Is that okay with you?
Yeah. Yes, that's fine with me.
Okay. Emily, anything else that you wanted to do as a progress note or any questions or anything you'd like to talk about? You are Robin. Anyone want to bring up anything or discuss anything before we move into the material? Well, let's do that, and then we'll have a bit more time at the end for discussion. So we're going to look at the last two steps today, author new experiences and program new identity. And I think this is really important in terms of bringing a sense of closure to new experiences, and I'll explain more about that in a minute. We basically trust our stories. They're our reality. So when our stories and our behaviors don't fit, we experience disharmony. Remember we talked about we are basically happy whenever our blueprint matches our life experiences, our blueprint of what we expect to happen, our beliefs. When they match our experiences, we're happy. When we're not happy, that's when one or the other doesn't match, and we have to change. So we can either change our blueprint or we can change our life experiences. And what we're talking about here is really changing the blueprint as well as the behavior. So we have to change one or the other to restore harmony. Sometimes we revise our stories. Sometimes we simply change the way we see reality. Now, we've also considered if your story doesn't allow you to do certain things. If your story is that you're a procrastinator, it will disallow you from finishing early. If your story says you don't do technology well, you'll probably live out that assumption. As we monitor our impact as coaches, we want to listen for what works and what doesn't, how to dose, time, and titrate our responses, how to incorporate the client's work and performance and personality styles into the work, to not respond personally to the client's stuckness or resistance. So as we guide clients to author new experiences, the idea of change, it initially will cause excitement. Then as it's on the cusp of action, can I get a mute of the background noise? If you know you're not going to say anything, go ahead and mute because there's a little bit of shuffling and other sounds in the background. But don't forget to unmute when you're ready to come back. So then as it's on the cusp of action, maybe anxiety, then expansion, and then finally mastery. So listen for a couple of different aspects that can appear together that can seem paradoxical. And this is a view from a wide-angle lens. They're really, it's a developmental overview of writing a new story. The first, every step forward means relinquishing a past position. Someone must mourn. They must say goodbye emotionally as well as practically and behaviorally to a familiar, maybe long-held and practiced old story. This is a process. It's a developmental step, not something you can just say and make it so or recognize it and change it. And it's like saying goodbye to an old friend, to give up a habit or a pattern of behavior or even a hope that by getting the old story just right or doing it better will make it work. So no matter how maladaptive, the old story still has to be mourned. Here's an example. Each of the hundreds of young women with bulimia and even redefine her identity. And two, the more subtle aspect in learning something new and creating change is an injury to self-esteem. Now, that may particularly sound paradoxical, but a carefully crafted old story, even with some aspects of identity attached, is replaced by something better. So the very best that you could do, suddenly you recognize that there's something that can be better, and you look at, why didn't I know this earlier, or how did I miss this? So it's like a kind of brief injury to self-esteem in a way. Now, I see at least six components in a dynamic of change. Now, these aren't headlines. You're not going to see each of these with a client, but they're just to think about as kind of internal conceptual markers for us as mentor coaches. The myth that there is a perfect choice. The illusion that the perfect choice will solve all problems. The disappointment that nothing's perfect. There isn't even an ultimate arbiter of fairness. The development. The recognition that no one is going to take care of for you. The growth to take the next best action. And finally, the consolidation. The happy, sad experience resulting. Happy about the autonomy of moving ahead, the effectiveness of not constructing an obstacle, but sad about mourning an old story.
What was the last one?
And sad about mourning an old story.
I'm sorry, but after growth?
The consolidation, the happy, sad experience, the combination of at the same time happy and sad.
Okay.
Happy about moving ahead and feeling effective and mastery, not constructing an obstacle, but sad because you're leaving an old story, a part of
right.
one's identity, really.
Okay.
Make sense?
Yep.
So, to author new experiences, sometimes we have to think outside the box. But how do you do that? What is the box, even? How do you think outside it? Here's how Randall Kennedy put it. Thinking that frees itself of reflexive obedience to familiar signals. This is one of the quotes I saw printed on the student union at Princeton. How do you know when you're in the box to get out of it to revise your story or write another one? Now, these questions assume that the story is there, like a given in the universe, as if the story, the proverbial box of the familiar and accepted, is the obstacle. But it's not there until you create it or accept it. And we're always free to change our minds, beliefs, core assumptions. So the box is the result of programming and conditioning. It's self-created in adulthood. Boxes aren't a bad thing. They don't have to be limiting. They can be even defining, guiding, validating, expandable. Very useful shortcuts. Now, listen to these different boxes to hear how very arbitrary and situational each one is and how each has its own intrinsic set of beliefs and behaviors and rules. The first, people treat a piece of processed leather as if it were sacred. They protect it, they hide it, they try to steal it. There are all kinds of rules about what you can and can't do with it. Even who can touch it or hold it. If it crosses an arbitrary line somebody draws, it can count for different points. +2, -2, 3, sometimes 6. Football. Second, another. It moves in and out of your life. It varies daily. You want more, but you may keep doing the same thing not to get it. Two people can do the very same thing and obtain hugely different quantities. You can buy it or sell it, but the price changes daily, even minute by minute. It's a stand-in for what you want, even at times for what you despise. It's the most desired legal substance to all peoples of the world. Money. And third, There's no clear definition of winning. It's always at risk. There's always a price to pay. There's always another level of success. Money, your life story, your wellness story. Here's a footnote for those of you working with executives or owners to write the next chapter of a business story. The box can be limiting and inflexible. The canal boat companies of the 1700s didn't become the railroad companies of the 1800s. They stuck to their box. And in the 1900s, there were no Union Pacific Airlines. They stuck to their box. Good to gone. Motorola stuck to their story and slid from a premier electronics firm to a troubled industry. Meanwhile, Nokia asked and listened to children and young people just developing their stories and use their feedback to become world-class, good to great. So open yourself to possibilities you haven't quite imagined yet. Scarcity is a rigid box. Abundance is expandable. No one can grant you freedom. You have to declare it. No one gives you power. You have to generate it, claim it, and not give it away. To recognize yourself as the author, the creator of your story, challenges an assumed model and leads to the deeper question, how do I create something else instead? And even, what will that something else be? To simply stop doing something is not complete change. A new story means incorporating new behavior and beliefs. You have to embody, actually live your new story. The very best way, in fact, the only way to totally give up an old story is to fully inhabit a new story. To abstain from an old story, stuckness or repetition, is a beginning. But someone has to engage a new story before the old story can really be given up. A mind that accepts a new idea generates a new dimension. A brain that creates new experience alters neurochemistry and neuronal pathways. And we now know from neuroscience the brain is sculpted by changes and experiences. The mind can change the brain. It's an inside job. Now, in looking at this step about authoring new experiences, there are a dozen AAA principles of change to author a new story. The three A's: awareness, acceptance, and action. Here are the principles. One, you're writing your own story. Is it working? For each component, what are the results? Honestly assess each of these storylines with a question, is it working, and make that a yes or no. Your personal wellness story, mind, body, spirit. Your business career story. Your relationship story. Your money story. When I ask people what they look forward to and what they're most afraid of for the next chapters of their lives, they often respond with vague dreams yet specific fears. The top of the list of long-term concerns, health and money. A not-so-secret to success is that you have to pay in full for that success. So you might as well find out what the price is, pay it in full, pay it as soon as possible, and then enjoy the benefits of success. The price is always some form of energy, whether that energy is money, time, work, or experience. If you get something for which you haven't provided value or benefit, you'll still have to pay in some way. For example, if you incur debt in order to purchase something before you've earned the money, you simply end up paying more for it. And here's another non-secret. People who truly enjoy getting what they want are those who find a way to enjoy paying the price. This makes it easy to pay. The price is whatever you need to give in order to generate exactly what you want. I'm doing it right now. I love this. I think you're each going to make such a difference in so many lives. So it's not even paying a price. It's a passion. Two. You're writing your own story. It takes just as much energy to create any belief in your story, positive or negative, past, present, future, adaptive or maladaptive, the same energy. The belief of scarcity takes just as much energy as abundance. You generate the energy and give power to your story. And here's the subtle but crucial distinction. You give specific power to your story, and then it assumes a momentum and power of its own. Remember, you're not the subject of that process. You're the creator of it. And here's a short list of some results when you focus on what you don't want. Fear, anxiety, anger, confusion, annoyance, helplessness, guilt. 3, you're writing your own story. Decide what you want. The primary reason people don't get what they want is they're not quite sure what they want. Here's a neuroscience law of attraction question. How does the brain work like a travel agent? The first two questions a travel agent asks, where do you want to go? When do you want to get there? A goal is like MapQuest. You program in where you want to go. You create a map and determine the time. Now, a caveat here, to know what not to do is at least as important as knowing what to do. You may not always know exactly what the next right thing is, but you can almost always know what it isn't. What you resist, you draw toward you. Resistance is an engagement. It's kind of analogous to saying anger is as passionate an attachment as love. It requires just as much energy. And most suffering is the result of resisting what already is. People resist going to the doctor, but they aren't afraid of doctors. They're afraid their denial is going to be confronted. 4, you're writing your own story. Do you have specific, measurable goals? In a Harvard study begun in the mid-1950s, 10 to 15% of the Harvard Business School graduates fashioned a vision and had specific goals for their life and business. 5 decades later, those 10 to 15% had 90% of the assets of the entire group. Motivation increases as soon as you're clear about the goal and the payoff. Focus enhances when you have a specific plan and strategy. I'd suggest that you each review from the workbook section the exercise 11 Steps to Ignite Success, beginning page 3.13. And I want to highlight 3 components that are aspects of what we do often with clients as coaches. One is to have a client establish 3 SMART goals. And SMART, as you know, is the acronym for specific, measurable, achievable, relevant, and time-bound. And a timetable here may be somewhere between 30 and 90 days. And then for each of the 3 SMART goals, determine 3 key initiatives to take. And the timetable here, 7 to 10 days. And then for each key initiative, a next best action. And the timetable is 24 hours. So see how you've created a structure, a system for laddering the next step and the initiative to the goal. So as soon as you achieve the next step, you look at what the following step will be. And when you achieve that initiative, you set another initiative further down the road toward that specific goal. Now, it's estimated that less than 10% of people have measurable goals. 100% of people have good ideas, at least some. The difference between a good idea, measurement, and time. Where and when, the travel agent question. Here's a good idea. I'd like to lose weight. Here's a goal. I will reach 185 pounds by April 19th this year when I run in the marathon in Boston with my daughter. Here's a good idea. I want to make more money. Here's a goal. I will generate $220,000 from coaching and $215,000 from products and royalties in the next 11 months. Here's one more example. here's a good idea. I'll save more for retirement. Here's a goal. I will set up an automatic deduction of $300 every month from my checking account to go into my IRA. Now, also, write a breakthrough goal, something that would stretch you, bring incredible opportunities, move you to a higher level, a quantum leap, getting a book on the New York Times bestseller list, spending every March skiing in Steamboat Springs, and every August riding on the coast of Maine. Now, you guys have to substitute your own goals here. Then, reread your goals, regular and breakthrough, twice a day, when you wake up and when you go to bed. 5, you're writing your own story. Small changes lead to big changes. Issues that seem overwhelmingly large and insurmountable can be approached by looking at the simplicity of the issue to specify a step to take for progress. For example, if you feel overwhelmed at work with the amount of tasks, identify one specific thing that you can do in the next 24 hours that will give you some traction. This focus on a simple, specific action creates a sense of effectiveness and initiates a model of mastery. Terry Fox ran the Marathon of Hope. It's a cross-Canada run of 3,339 miles. Since he had an artificial leg, his running style was a shuffle and a hop. He managed to average 24 miles a day, completed the run in 143 days. Immediately after he completed the race, he was interviewed and asked how did he keep himself going when he was exhausted and knew he still had thousands of miles ahead. His response, "I just kept running to the next telephone pole." So, divide up your work. Focus on and complete one thing at a time. There's always something you can focus on. During my specialty training in psychiatry, one of my first-year supervisors had a really puzzling picture on the wall. It was a photograph, and everything in it was out of focus. I met with him every week. I glanced at the photograph. Finally, toward the end of the year, I asked him about it. He said, "Look carefully, Dave. What do you see?" Well, I walked over to the photograph to get a closer look. Closer didn't help. It still seemed out of focus. I saw no particular aesthetic value. My experience and considerable interest in photography didn't help. I'd been published in National Geographic World at this time. And I finally said, "Steve, the only thing I notice is there's one branch of one tree in focus in the entire picture." He nodded. He said, "That's why I have it hanging there. It's my reminder that while things seem confusing and blurry, there's always at least one thing that you can have in focus and see clearly," which is why he was a great supervisor for first-year residents. 6, you're writing your own story. Be consistent in the pursuit of your goals. It takes 25 to 30 days to etch a new pathway in your brain to make it permanent. And this is for the simple behavior response kind of things. Remember the NASA astronauts. So write your new story consistently for it to become the default mode. The difference between a genius idea and a true story of success, Malcolm Gladwell tells us, in Outliers, is about 10,000 hours. 7, you're writing your own story. The benefit of doing more of what's working and less of what isn't working will become evident and self-perpetuating. And that's a very basic tenet about coaching that we've talked about before. If it works, do more of it. If it doesn't work, do something else. Now, this is all so simple. Good parents have known this for centuries. But sometimes it takes human science and cognitive research to remind us of the obvious. We can foster change by conscious practices and effective tools. An infinite sea of new patterns and possibilities can be created to generate new goals. The caveat, you have to take action to diminish pre-programmed responses and to write new script for new experiences. In other words, a new story has to replace the old story. And there are no shortcuts, since long-term change requires consistent practice, repetition, to groove new neuronal pathways and establish new neural networks. But there are effective and efficient methods to accelerate optimum change and ensure transformation. 8. You're writing your own story. Ask for feedback to your spouse or partner. Ask, on a scale of 1 to 10, rate the quality of our relationship. To your employees or colleagues, on a scale of 1 to 10, how am I doing? Then, how can I get to 10? A tribe in southern Africa called the Bemba has an interesting practice. When they hear a story of a person doing something wrong, something that destroys the social net of their tight community, all work in the village halts. The people gather around the offender and one by one recite all that that person has done right in his life. Good deeds, responsible behavior, thoughtful acts. This honest feedback on misbehavior has a time-honored consequence to allow the person to reclaim the better part of himself. He remembers who he is and why he is important to the life of the village. This may have been an original 360-degree feedback. Even without this kind of social network and feedback, we can relax and remember our way back into alignment with our true selves. We can get centered and reconnect with our essence. So, an application here. Find people who already successfully do what you want and get what you want. Research what they do in order to do your own version of it. Ask, learn, question, but make it your story. Guess who said this? It's not that I'm so smart. It's that I stay with problems longer. That was Albert Einstein. And here's, I think, an interesting statistic. After giving a complete presentation about the benefits of their service or product, more than 60% of seasoned salespeople forgot to ask for the order. How to ask is a crucial factor. Ask clearly, confidently, sincerely. Virginia Satir, the well-known family therapist, was hired by the Michigan State Department of Social Services to submit a proposal on how to restructure the Department of Social Services to better serve the client population. 60 days later, she provided the department with a 150-page report. They said two things. This is the most amazing report, and how did you come up with all these brilliant ideas? She said, well, I just ask all the social workers in your department what it would take for the system to work better. Now, as a sidebar here, you may have noticed so far, in each of these AAA principles of change to author a new story, they begin the same way. You're writing your own story. That's the first four steps of the roadmap. Recognize, observe, assess, and decide what to change, compressed into the shorthand of awareness and acceptance. The third A, 12 action steps. 9, you're writing your own story. Get success insurance. Instead of waiting for good luck, luck is defined as probability taken personally, which is to say narcissism meets chance. Now, there's a review of research on goal setting in your workbook. It was led by Goldsmith, the founder of executive coaching. It helps us understand two essential components: why people give up on goals and how effective goal setting can help ensure long-term achievement. And what the study showed, and it's listed in your workbook component, the six most important reasons people give up on goals. So in knowing these, the inverse is success insurance, ownership. Somebody needs to buy in and own their goals. Time. Goal setters tend to underestimate the time it'll take to complete the task. like an optimism bias that leads to giving up. And difficulty, the optimism bias equally applies to difficulty as well as time. Another, distractions. People tend to underestimate the distractions and competing goals. Maintenance, the challenge is to maintain new behavior. There's always the pull of the old and the fear of the new. And finally, rewards. Disappointment can set in when achievement of a goal doesn't translate into other goals or desired happiness. So this is something to listen for and resonate with for the client to address these and reverse them to create a success insurance. 10. You're writing your own story. Take a chance. You didn't have a New York Times bestseller before you sent your manuscript to an agent. If you get it rejected, you still don't. What do you got to lose? What's the problem? You spent your whole life not having a New York Times bestseller. A young chiropractor just out of professional school wanted to open a practice in Carmel, California. But he was told he'd never make it. There's already one chiropractor for every 8 people in the town. He went to 12,500 homes, talked to 6,500 people. He simply asked 3 questions. Which location should I open my office, the north or west side of town? Should I have extra office hours between 7 and 9 in the morning or 5 and 7 in the afternoon? And which newspaper should I advertise in? And then he added as he was leaving, when I have an open house party, would you like an invitation? In the first month, he took in $72,500 and in the first year netted over $1 million. 11. You're writing your own story. It's never too late to start. Don't let conventional wisdom or limiting assumptions ghostwrite your story. Cliff Beon was a 61-year-old Australian sheep herder. He heard about a cross-country race from Sydney to Melbourne and decided to enter. He showed up in Oshkosh overalls and work boots. The officials looked at him like he was crazy. They said, this is a race of over 800 kilos. The most seasoned runners in the world compete. Do you have any running experience and equipment? And he said, yeah, I run after my sheep every day, and I got these boots and this baseball cap. So when the race began, the world-class runners took off as they were trained to begin. Cliff started shuffling along in his boots. You're supposed to run 18 hours and sleep 6, but nobody told Cliff this. And initially, when the other runners were sleeping, he just kept shuffling along. He shuffled along for almost 4 days. He cut 5.5 hours off the world record. We each have beliefs that limit us. Find the story that will improve you and start believing that. If there were no barriers, what would your ideal life be? And 12. You're writing your own story. Everything is okay in the end. If it's not okay, it's not the end. For tens of thousands of years before books and computers, we transmitted our essence and our principles by story. Story linked to the past, organized the present, and illuminated the future. Story allowed us to connect with each other's humanity in the paths crossed on the long journeys out of Africa to populate the rest of the world. Then the anatomy and physiology of our brains grew by putting thoughts and feelings into stories. Stories informed, instructed, inspired, governed, organized. Story is the most powerful way humans communicate. Stories give birth to possibility. Stories are a way that we resonate with our earlier selves, connect with others, and create a roadmap to proceed. Your story is yourself, your life, and what will survive you. At some point in the distant future, all that will be left of you, all that will survive you, is your story. Be sure to get it right. I'm going to pause for just a moment to see if there are any questions. I want to address step 7, but I want to pause to see if there are comments or questions or any kind of clarifications. then I'll move into step 7. Program new identity to incorporate and sustain the changes. This is an essential component to think about that we're thinking about as coaches throughout the engagement with a coaching client, that it's something that we want to look at helping someone incorporate the model of how and who they are, the model of change to go along with the behavior change so that they internalize this process and see it as a transformation of themselves and their identity so that that's current as well as the behavior. Now, one thing to consider is a mission statement. In business, a mission statement is a statement of an organization's primary purposes, the strategies to achieve that purpose, and its fundamental values. Now, consider a personal mission statement. It can clarify and provide meaning to your daily activities. It can add focus and commitment to what you're doing. There are basically 4 elements to a mission statement: ideals, purpose, strategies, and goals. Ideals are the core values that motivate and guide you. They define what's important to you. And remember doing the needs and ideals exercise as part of assessing your story. Purpose, what you wish to accomplish, and purpose needs to be consistent with your ideals. Strategy is simply the art and science of a plan of action. And goals, effective goals, are SMART goals. So create a personal mission statement is my suggestion. What is your life purpose? What are you meant to do? This is the compass to guide your life story to personal fulfillment. I'll share mine. To inspire and guide others to achieve their unique, most empowered life and business story. Write yours down. Read it every day. An aspect that we sometimes overlook, follow success trails. Have you said some version or heard a client say some version of this? I want to change careers, but I'm not sure what I'd do instead. I'd like to really get in shape, but I don't know where to start. I want to play a bigger game, but I'm not quite sure what it is. So decide how you want to expand. Then pick success trails to follow. Seek out a mentor, books, program, or resources to help you. Watch someone who's doing what you might want to do. Ask if you can take them to lunch and pick their brain, or shadow them for a day to observe. When my good buddy Art heard that I was transitioning from psychoanalytic practice and completed my professional coaching training, he flew to Houston to take me to dinner. A few years earlier, he left IBM as the lead salesperson in the country out of 10,000 sales to start his own operation. He'd moved into an executive position at that time. He told me how when he made that transition, he chose 5 very successful people who had done something similar to what he was doing, to moving to his own private firm and doing consulting. He took them to lunch or dinner to pick their brains about what he was about to do, and he advised me to do the same. It worked for both of us. Some business people with instant global recognition pick his brain for substantial picking fees. So create a support team. Construct an advisory board, a networking group. Engage a mentor. Join a mastermind group. So I want to look at, remember when we talked about the neuroscience of creating a vision, I'd like to look at the art and science of affirmations now in a little bit more detail. This is what will be the story that supports the vision, and I think it's really important in this aspect of programming new identity. To achieve a goal, reprogram your automatic pilot by affirmations. Affirmations are positive statements that state the goal as if it's already been achieved. They provide the context and support for visualization. Affirmations make a visualization a complete story. So for affirmations to be optimally effective, these are some things to incorporate. Present tense. Begin with, I am. and state the goal as if you've already achieved it. I am enjoying this month of skiing and steamboat. Make it positive. Your brain will achieve the image you focus on. The purpose of an affirmation is to create a story that supports the visualization. A positive image and statement is more powerful than ideas. Personal. Make your affirmations about your experience and accomplishment. Don't try to change other people's behavior. I'm watching my daughter clean her room. Personally guarantee you that won't work. It has to be about you. Have a visual component. Use all five senses, different lenses, wide angle and close up. Make a complete picture of experiencing the success with all of your senses. Emotional. Include a feeling word. I am happily interacting. I am peacefully experiencing. A primary reason we do things is how we imagine we'll feel when we do it. Be brief. Brevity is the soul of wit and of affirmations. Be specific. Clearly focused, specific detail makes it real. No abstractions. Use action words. I am driving. I am acting. I am living. If you say, I'm going to, you'll always be on the way. Be consistent. As soon as you let up on the disciplined, focused pursuit of a goal, your automatic pilot will revert back to the familiar. This is the frustration that you've probably seen in a number of people of losing significant weight and then letting up to have it regained. And remember the astronauts who got day 15 off? Had to start all over. And then finally, add or something better. I'm enjoying my month each summer riding on the coast of Maine or something better. That has happened for me. I spend the month of September in New Orleans in an old Creole cottage as a writing retreat each year. And the book that I've done is with my agent, and I'm about to start a sequel to it. So always add or something better, because you never know. Because remember, we have to create our vision from our own system. So sometimes we have to work at transcending that. So or something better is kind of like a stretch goal. Another suggestion about this. Write each goal and affirmation on a 3x5 card. Read each one at the beginning and the end of each day. Remember to visualize yourself as already having achieved the goal. So what you're doing is creating a future memory. You're rewiring your brain with the experience of the success so that it's simply a matter of strategically backing into it. When you program your system with a visualized goal, you create structural tension in your brain, cognitive dissonance, which is the difference between where you are and where you visualize and affirm. Your brain then strives to end this tension by actualizing the goal. So the vision rewires your brain, the affirmations revise the software of your mind and provide the story to support your vision. So this is specifically what this structural tension, this dissonance in your brain will do when you create a vision and have affirmations to support it. It will give you creative ideas. It will help you see things you haven't seen before, a perceptual shift, new possibilities. It will activate motivation to take action. And remember, the universe rewards action. How long do you do this? Well, until the goal is realized. How many goals should you generate affirmation for? Well, a reasonable amount, probably at least three, that you're working on a regular basis. In this way, you create the feeling of internal success, the actual experience of internal success. Because remember, your brain can't tell the difference between a story that you conjure in your mind and a story that comes through the optic nerve. You create the feeling, the experience of internal success. You inhabit the experience. Now, this affirmation or even this vision initially may make you feel uncomfortable or even anxious. With an affirmation that's positive and not yet achieved, you are challenging the core belief of your identity, of who you are. So it's important to tolerate this discomfort or this trepidation, not to engage it, to counter it, to say, well, who am I really kidding? You know, this is not me. I may say this, but, you know, I don't really believe it. You are each alchemists. Alchemists are people who believe in potential, in transformative power. And remember the most important lesson from everything I've said during this time together today. Just keep going to the next telephone poll. Your thoughts, questions, things that would be helpful to talk about. Are you hearing how important I think it is that we believe in ourselves and convey a belief in our client to them? That to me is the most important thing that we will ever be able to give a client, is our belief in that client. Because that will, remember from neuroscience, that will change their mindset, their experience, their state of mind, and it will be something they can live into. Because it may be the one thing that they've lacked in their life, to not have someone who totally believes in them, who is totally dedicated to their success. And conveying that belief, they will live into it and teach you both why you believe in them. And you'll both come to know that for the first time, even though you've believed them in them, they will substantiate it. So I believe that's why it's so important to work with clients who you believe in. I only work with clients in whom I believe, because it doesn't work any other way. But when you believe in someone, they'll teach you both why. Thoughts or questions or things that you'd like to talk about?
I had a question. When you were talking about honest feedback on misbehavior has consequences, when you gave that example.
Yes.
Were you saying that their tribe was giving them wrong feedback, or that was a good thing?
When they looked at positive feedback, it provided context as a very good thing that he could live back into his true and authentic self.
Okay.
So rather than focusing on something negative, focusing on something negative really does not work. I work with pro athletes and train player development specialists how to work with and how to even do life coaching with pro athletes. If a defensive coach focuses on a mistake that a safety missed a coverage and his man caught a football, if that coach says, you really have to be more alert out there and improve, and really comes down on him hard, he's going to make it worse the next time. That kind of thing doesn't work, to focus on the negative. To look at and live in, let me give you a very simple example. When I first started, the very first time I coached a basketball team was when my son was 8. And they were playing, he and his buddies were playing for the first time, and they didn't know anything about a basketball. So if they were doing 10 things, I focused on the one thing that was really working and that was an efficient way to do things. And they recognized somehow that the reason that it was a good way to do things is they felt really effective in doing it, and the other things didn't feel as good. And pretty soon then, they were coming to do all the things that began with the experience of affirming what was already in the flow of their experience of this was feeling good, and we looked at all the right things to do instead of beginning with the rules or the mistakes or what shouldn't be done. And the same when my daughter began playing a couple of years later. Same process and same principles. So we focus, and that's why, for example, focusing on things at a company level or at an HR level to look at changes in a positive way, it sets up a different kind of conversation. You know, I mentioned this in the beginning when we talked about conversational intelligence. Remember, we talked about how the way that you begin a sentence, the first five or six words, boots up a particular mindset in the listener. If it's adversarial, if it's pejorative or judgmental, it's going to boot up a mindset that is about protection, that will be a framework of a very different way of hearing and processing the remainder of that conversation. If it's a collaborative, collegial way of beginning, mediated by a totally different neurochemical system, oxytocin, which is about connection, that will be the framework of processing the entire remainder of the conversation. And what the Babimba tribe did was to establish a context of moving back into an ideal self, not seeing the behavior as anything other than outlier behavior, not having it be unduly focused on or redefining that person as bad, but allowing them to redefine their true essence and move more at the center of that. And that's what we do with clients as well.
Can I give you an example or a question?
Please.
So last night I caught myself feeling anxious and having anxiety and fear of my cancer returning. And so I caught myself talking to a friend, feeling negative, like it's going to come back. So are you saying I should never feel like that worry? I should, my goal is to not have that fear anymore and don't worry about that and just always maintain positivity? Or how do you, when you, that fear comes, how do you?
Okay. Let's do
this.
We're
going to
be doing this in a much more systematic way. But take a sheet of paper, a totally clean sheet of paper, and draw three vertical lines so that you have four columns.
Okay.
In the first column, this is for everybody because you can try this out. In the first column, put emotional cue or trigger. The second column, put usual response. And the fourth, in the third column, put mantra, M-A-N-T-R-A. It's the three-part way of getting grounded and centered. And then in the fourth column, put ideal behavior. Now, here's what I'm suggesting, and this is the way I'd work with a client. What I'm suggesting to you is that when you begin to think about your cancer may return, that is content of an altered state of mind. That's in column two. There was something that you had as an emotional cue or trigger that booted up that old mindset and the content
mm-hmm.
in that mindset. Now, what doesn't work is to try to work with that content. This is what a lot of therapy gets stuck doing, is trying to work with this content. But that's content of a specific state of mind that is from a different period of time. But the content now, when it's booted up, seems totally real. So you can't resolve or work through or understand within that state. You have to get centered and grounded, column three, and then move to an ideal behavior or ideal response. Now, and let me give you an example of how this can work. see if there's an analogy here that you can think about. When I first developed this, it's called a neural conditioning chart, because once you are recognizing the cues or the triggers that set in motion a state change, and then instead get grounded and centered and moved into ideal behavior, when you go across the rows and you do it enough, it rewires your brain so that the original cue or trigger boots up a totally different experience in the fourth column, an ideal behavior, after it's done enough. It's a hard work miracle. It takes a while. Let me give you an example from how this began. I was working with an executive woman, a very, very accomplished woman, and we had done some work about her executive functioning, and she was really doing great. And then she mentioned that it was coming up on a major holiday. It was going to be Thanksgiving. And she said that on a major holiday, she would alternately spend Christmas or Thanksgiving with her family, that inevitably she would have a meltdown and have, you know, anger, arguments with her parents, with her two siblings, and she had never been able to successfully bring that into any kind of focus or any kind of strategy. And then she described a good deal of what that was about. So what I suggested that she do is, and I had her draw out a kind of a rough sketch of this four-column approach that we just talked about, and I suggested that she schedule an appointment with herself, a time that she would keep as loyally as she would any appointment with any professional, from a doc to our mentor coaching session. Set aside a time, at least 30 minutes, no interruptions, no telephone calls, and observe the different cues or triggers that would set in motion these different experiences with her family. To be an observer, not to re-enter that state, not to get upset all over again, but just to observe it. And to be very specific about it, because usually the cue trigger is so highly specific. And she came to recognize it was the way her dad would raise his eyebrows about certain things she said, a couple of phrases that her mother would say, a particular way that her brother would goad her into response. There were a number of things. She came up with a dozen or 15 different cues or triggers, and specifically for each one, what her reaction was. Then I suggested that at a different time, because it's a different part of the brain, at a different time, she look at the third and fourth columns. How, as soon as she recognizes the cue and the usual response, how to get grounded and centered as quickly as she recognizes it. And that's the purpose, the first two columns, just to cue your radar for an earlier recognition so that she can get grounded and centered. And we looked at a mantra, and a mantra is three parts. One is something to cue a focus and a physiology. And a focus can be a simple phrase like relaxed and powerful, and a physiology like a deep breath. We'll go into this more when we look at master states of mind. But a deep breath to breathe in relaxation and breathe out any tension. And then to have pre-planned an ideal response so that she can use that cue or trigger to recognize earlier what her automatic response would be, and instead to get grounded and centered and move into an ideal response. And I told her that she would probably need to do this grounding and centering several times during even the course of a conversation or a dinner in the beginning until it becomes more automatic. And she came back after the holiday and reported it was the best holiday that she had ever had. And she got better and better at this throughout the 2.5 or 3 days that she was there. So that's an example of how specific cue or trigger can boot up a mindset that has all of this content. And I'm suggesting the content here is the cancer will come back, and the anxiety or the worry or the concern is all the content of that state of mind. And rather than dealing with the content, to deal with the process of what booted up that state, and to recognize it as soon as possible, to get grounded and centered, and then move into an ideal response. So ultimately, whatever cued that state change can cue that ideal behavior. Now, does that make sense?
Yeah, that was really helpful. Thank you.
Does it make sense as a practical way to go about addressing this?
Yes.
Try it and see, and give us a report or a progress note to see how it may be, if it's applicable to you.
Okay.
We have just a minute or two. Any other thoughts or questions?
This is Robin. I have a quick question. I just want to thank Emily for that question, because mm-hmm. it's certainly something that's applicable for me and my family and will help me as well. So thank you, Emily. My question is, how do you come up with the focus, the mantra? Is it like an algorithm of what you view your ideal behavior, your ideal response would be? Can you develop it as an affirmation?
The focus is simply to align the energy field of your brain, because we get what we focus on. So what you focus on, like when I, before I do a keynote, my cue is I put together my index finger and thumb of both hands to form two little circles, and then put those together to form an infinity sign. And I say the phrase relaxed and powerful, and I have two deep breaths, breathing in relaxation, breathing out any tension. So in 5 to 6 seconds, I am at an optimum state to do a keynote. You know, when I'm training for the marathon and joining my daughter, my phrase is no matter what, or whatever it takes, that I keep saying that, because that can get me through any kind of, you know, pain or tiredness, or, you know, it doesn't allow the space of, you know, I need to knock off a little early here. So whatever it takes to work for you, in other words, you want to boot up a state of mind that is for optimum performance. If you do this at night when you go to bed to more effectively and efficiently go to sleep, you don't want to boot up a state for optimum performance for doing something like a keynote or for running. You want to boot up optimum relaxation. So your phrase may be consistent with that. Relax to sleep, and then to breathe in, to regulate the physiology of it, to align the energy field of your mind, and establish the entry to the state that's going to be most fitting for exactly what you want to do. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Yes, thank you.
Super.
Thank you.
Okay, all right, great. Great discussion. We're out of time. We'll pick up right here next time. Thanks very, very much.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.